Greetings and salutations, and welcome to Radio Days, a podcast radio program that delves into the world of terrestrial radio. It's DJs and on-air personality, and you, all fans of radio as a medium. Here's your host, Ron.
Hello and welcome to episode 4 of season 4 of Radio Days, the podcast. Very excited about today's show. Have an awesome guest. He's one of the best. But before I bring him in, I want to let you know that you can hear this podcast on Buzzsprout, as well as all major podcast platforms like Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify as well. You can also watch this podcast via YouTube and at ronrobinsonstudios.com. Radio Days, the podcast, is sponsored by Radio Days 101 Years of Radio, which is a new 5-part documentary about the history of radio. Hear the story from those who lived it. Dick Burton, Greg Russell, Doug Podell, JoJo Shuddy McGregor, Ken Calvert, Jill Forsyth, Art Regner, Terry Foster are just a few of the scores of radio personalities and historians who appear in this documentary. You can also, just a reminder, watch the entire 5-part series on the free streaming service called Reveal or at Vimeo, and you can find the link to Vimeo on my website, ronrobinsonstudios.com. My guest today, as I mentioned, is, well, I haven't mentioned this, but he's a country radio legend in Detroit. But other than Detroit, he's been heard on WFLZ in Tampa, WUBE in Cincinnati. He's also worked for CBS Radio. We're going to ask him about that. But as I mentioned, he's best known for his time in Detroit at a radio station called 99.5 WYCD, where he hung his hat for over 20 years, even before it was a country station. Did I mention he's a country radio Hall of Famer? Very cool. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the incomparable Dr. Don Carpenter. Don, how are you, sir?
Pretty good. How about yourself? Thanks for having me on. I much appreciate it.
I can't complain. Yeah, no, go ahead and give the explanation. The show's gone to the birds. You got some birds.
Most people know that I have parrots, and one of them talks, and so he's going to chime in. He's sitting on top of the computer, so occasionally you'll see his tail drop down there, or there'll be a claw come right on. And the cockatoo, step up so you can see everybody. There she is.
Oh, lovely. Beautiful.
She's the louder of the two, and the more you're going to have to move your feathers. They're getting in the way.
That's awesome. The papers are up. That's awesome. So there we go. There we go. So the live, the magic of live podcasting. Yeah, the bird. There you go. Let's get that back into focus. There. Yeah.
Stay on that side and don't close the browser.
So Don, before we get into your career in broadcasting, let's go back to a young Don Carpenter. What were you listening to on the radio when you were growing up?
When I was growing up, I had older parents for one. So there was a station in town that it catered to, I guess, what you call a little older adult contemporary, and they would play a little country.
Okay.
And it was a big blowtorch AM called KRMG. And at night they had a big band show by a band leader, Johnny Martin,
right,
who did that for like, I don't know, 20 years or something like that. So we always had that on. Listen to boxing. I grew up learning boxing from my dad because he was a huge fan of that. And then as I got a little bit older and I got into school and I got into like high school, all the kids were listening to the top 40 station. So of course you had to do what the kids were doing. So what your schoolmates were doing. So I flipped over and started listening to the top 40. And the longer I listened to it, even back when I was just a little kid, it's like someday I want to be on a radio. I want to be a veterinarian during the day and then do radio on the weekends. That's kind of the way I wanted to do it. Didn't quite work out that way, but here we are.
Well, now you're raising birds. I wanted to ask you, it's one thing to be a fan of radio, but when and why and how did you decide, you know what, I'm going to pursue this as a career, being in radio broadcasting?
Well, I don't know that, I got to turn the speaker up on you just a little bit for some reason or another.
Yeah, you're coming in pretty low.
There we go.
Better?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good.
I'll repeat the question, yeah.
That's all right.
Go ahead.
The decision kind of got made for me, because while I was in college studying for veterinary medicine, I started working at the college radio station. I had a lot of fun doing that.
Right.
So when I got out of college or during the summers, I would go get a job at the top 40 radio station that I'd been listening to when I grew up. And the more I hung around there, the more I really kind of enjoyed it. Vet medicine didn't really work out for me, although the doc handle stuck for all these years. It's like I tell people. I've always told them, I go, well, I still remember how to spay a cat. I just wouldn't trust me with one you're particularly fond of.
That's awesome.
So, and I just kept getting gigs one after the next. My wife and I, we started a little savings account so I could go finish vet school and do it right. And every contract led to another contract. I mean, like anybody else in radio, I've been canned a couple dozen times, I guess. But I was never out terribly long. I think 1 year was the longest I was out of any of it. But I always got another deal, or I got my deal re-upped where I was at. And we just kept looking at each other going, well, all right, we're going to move again. And right. We're going to see a different part of the world. And then once I got to Detroit, it all kind of stuck.
You were Johnny Fever in Cincinnati, if you will. let's. I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves because I want to ask you about each of your stops. But what was your first job in radio, and what were you hired in to do?
Well, if you skip over the college radio station where I was in news, believe it or not, I was the science correspondent.
Very nice.
For the college radio station. If you want to skip over that, my first one was at KAKC in Tulsa, and I was an engineer.
Okay.
I know my way around electronics and stuff, so I got hired on by the engineering department there. And of course, once you're in the building, then it's a little bit easier to talk somebody into giving you a shift.
Right.
So, yeah, I did everything from climb towers to work with babysit automation units overnight and edit tape and stuff like that. I mean, it was just all fixing stuff. I had a soldering iron in my hand most of the time. And that skill set turned out very handy at a lot of other radio stations. When stuff breaks at right. 5 in the morning, you got to wait for an engineer to get there unless you are one. And then it makes it a lot easier to fix and just keep on going, which I did plenty of.
You know, I know back then you actually had to have a license to broadcast on the radio. Isn't that correct?
Yeah.
Could you, for some of my young listeners who can't even, a license, what did that entail and what did that allow you to do on the radio?
Well, in a nutshell, the radio telephone operator's license, you had to know the rules, and you had to have a pretty good working knowledge of electromagnetic radiation,
right.
Basically radio waves, what they do and how they do it, and how to keep the radio station that you're at, how to keep it within the legal limits or legal guidelines. And, I mean, there was basic electronics that you had to know for that, but for the most part, it got to the point that you didn't even need to take a test, and they eliminated it altogether. These days, you really don't need it.
Right.
The sophisticated transmitters, they take care of themselves. The meter readings, as we used to call them, they all are accessible over a tablet. Your engineer can be several miles or states away and still be able to check on the radio station control and get alerts if something goes wrong. That didn't exist back in the day. You had to have somebody like me go sit at a transmitter site while they're doing construction on things so that I could monitor the readings. Because if you didn't have control of the transmitter, you had to shut it down.
Right. Do you remember your first air show? What was the name of the station that you worked at your first gig?
The very first was KAKC.
Do you remember your first time you turned on the mic and what that was like?
The first time the microphone would go back to the college station doing a top 40 thing on there. That was
but still,
it was
I can,
a rush. I got to give you that.
I was just going to say, I contend that no matter where you go, the first time you open a mic at any radio station, there's nerves there. But this was a real radio station, not just a college. Do you remember some of the stuff you did on the air?
The first decent shift I got over there was just weekends, board hopping.
Sure.
And then after they would usually let me sub in for somebody that didn't show up at the last minute, they go, well, you know how to work the stuff, so sit down and make a go of it. And I did, and it was a rush. It was an awful lot of fun. Of course, at that time, you're constantly thinking because you've got all these rules in your head. You've got all these things that you've kind of got to keep in focus. So, you know, back then you had a wheel up on the wall. That was your songs to play.
Sure.
So as long as you remember to play a red and follow it by a green and then a yellow, and what you said in between was pretty much, you know, call letters, time, temperature, all that other stuff. And then as time went on, it got to where I started having a little bit more fun with it. And the more fun I had, the better shifts I got.
And obviously you developed your style at a very young age, getting on the air early. But talk to me about when you got hired at 96.3, the Power Pig in Tampa, Florida. Talk about that.
WFLZ. I actually came down here. I was working in Springfield, Missouri at the time, and the Internet was just getting started. And there was a bunch of us that would pool our get your foot off the camera. Off the camera. There you go. There's a bunch of us that would pool our comedy, pool our material, our ideas, our bits and things like that. And I just took to that. I loved Reitman doing that, and that caught the attention of the guy that was programming the Tampa station, which at the time was an oldie station.
Okay.
And Jack Harris was the host of the station, and they wanted somebody to come along to kind of support Jack, is what, you know, be a good sidekick to Jack. And then after I got down here 6 months later, and I think they knew this all the time, they had already planned to change the thing to a top 40 station, and a very edgy top 40 station at that. So that was half the reason they had brought me on, but I didn't realize that at the time. 6 months of playing oldies and, you know, having a good time, being the guy sitting off to the side making the jokes, I thought, okay, this is great. I'm going to love to do this. Of course, I always aspired to go to a larger market. I just didn't know which one. And, you know, that worked out pretty fine. We did a lot of stuff back then that's illegal now.
Like?
And and it's usually because we did it. And we did the bits the right way, and then stations in other cities would copy what we did, but without what we call backstopping the bit or the promotion. We always had our bases covered, and other places did not do that.
Can you give me an example?
Telephone calls.
Okay.
This is the one that got us, that probably got a law passed pretty quickly. Back in the old days, you could cold call somebody and put them right on the air. You didn't have to tell them anything. Now, you got to inform them before you put them on the air and before you start the tape recording.
Right.
You can't, well, I say
you got to let them know. Yeah.
Recording. Yeah, you have to let them know. Well, I want to kind of halfway take credit. We're the ones that did that because we cold called a lot of people. Now, we didn't do dumb things. I mean, you're not going to cold call somebody that's going to be mad about it.
Right.
You know, but if it's like somebody's birthday or we have a stunt to play on somebody, we just dial them right on up. And, you know, put them on live or put them on usually a tape delay in case they curse and just have a ball with it. And we did that a lot. If we got a hold of a celebrity's phone number, we'd cold call them and stuff like that because it always sounded good when they pick up the phone. You tell them who you are and, hey, by the way, you're on the radio.
Right.
And you can't do that anymore. You got to do that whole thing beforehand because too many other stations were cold calling people they shouldn't.
Yeah.
And the first time you put like a senator or representative on the air and you don't let them know that they're on the air,
right.
That was the end of that. That went away pretty quick. And then some of the contests that we did it one way and then another station would do it another. And so now those things have kind of become illegal. I'll give you an example of that. Now, remember, this was a very edgy top 40 station. So we put people in diapers. And they had blue jeans on over the diapers, and we gave them water. And or I think we did iced tea, because it seems like iced tea would go through more quickly.
Okay.
And the idea was the first person who could soak through the diaper wins.
Okay.
Now, we thought this through, because if you just give someone a pitcher of water, they're going to drink all of it.
Right.
And they're going to keep drinking, and they're going to keep drinking until they kill themselves, which is what happens. You can kill yourself by drinking, hey, enough, by drinking too much water. So we had it all timed out. You got a cup of water now, and then after the next time, you got another cup of water. This made it extend all the way through the show so that we didn't have a winner until pretty close to 10 o'clock when the show was over.
Okay.
But they only got a glass at a time.
Right.
We didn't let them sit there and drink out of the hose, and then some station out west, hey, that's enough. Some station out west let them drink. And there was a girl who died from that.
Oh, my goodness. So
she technically drowned because she sat there and drank, I don't know, 2-3 gallons of water without anybody stopping her.
Wow.
We all knew that was going to happen, so sorry about that.
No worries. The magic of live podcasting. This is good. Dr. Don in his habitat. I love it.
Yeah. And we had a lot of other contests that we did. It was the same thing. We always had it all figured out. And I did a lot of them back in Detroit. But again, for the most part, I remembered everything that I had learned down here. And so those contests that we did, we made sure nobody was going to get hurt. Everybody signed you know, a little disclaimer form,
right,
absolving us of anything. That doesn't mean that it didn't happen, but it was usually something that we didn't foresee. Or we made the mistake, and this is rule number one of radio. Whenever you lay something out, a bit or a contest or something like that, never change it at the last minute. Do not change the contest at the last minute. Stick with what you got, even if what you thought of at the last minute is a better idea. Apply that next time, because anytime you change in the middle of a contest or a bit like that, you've introduced a whole new area of things that could go wrong.
Okay,
I was just gonna,
yeah. If you're not prepared for it, you're preparing to fail, so to speak. All right. So,
oh yeah, we did the do-it-yourself pumpkin pie when the station was down there in Washington Square in Royal Oak. do-it-yourself pumpkin pie. We had people show up. We gave them aluminum pie pans.
Oh, my.
And then the idea was is we tossed the stuff out of the, we were fifth floor? Yeah, fifth floor window. And Keith Primo was up there, and he did some of the tossing, hockey great.
Right.
And he did some of the tossing with us. So basically, we're sending out tablespoons full of pumpkin pie filling, crumbled up crust, and then we're shooting whipped cream out there. Okay, all that from the fifth floor, that's not going to hurt anybody.
Right.
And they're all running around trying to catch it. And then somebody came up with the idea, hey, we got these little bitty pumpkins. Let's use real pumpkins. We changed the bit in the middle like that, and so tossing out pumpkins. Now, those things pick up a little bit of speed in five floors.
Right.
And sure enough, one of the girls that was running around with her pie pan sliced her thumb enough that we had to take her to the hospital. And she was a great sport about it.
Right.
Every time we would have a remote after that, she would show up to show everybody her scar and tell the story.
That's
and we're
great.
Like, you know, you couldn't
Thank
ask
you.
For a better
Thank
person
you.
To get injured.
Right.
It could have went
the other way. It could have went sideways.
That's what we were worried about. I mean, our boss was down there in a heartbeat, and everybody took care of her. And I was kicking myself because I knew the rule. You never change a bit at the end. Just don't.
So we're getting a little bit. Talk about when you got hired at 99.5, because you were brought in actually before they went country. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, that's right. Now, I had worked with a gentleman by the name of Randy Michaels down here, legendary radio programmer.
In Tampa.
And when I left the Power Pig, I ended up in Pittsburgh at a rock station up there. And this is the story as it was told to me. So one of the stations we were competing against, we were starting to have inroads on. And we didn't have very big ratings, but the if you want the Venn diagram of people that were listening to both stations, it kept crossing and crossing and crossing.
Sure.
So we were getting into their audience. So much so that their audience knew who we were. They were losing people. They would do a commercial or do some bit. Those people would come over to us, and they would listen to what we had to do. So apparently, we were getting in their way. The station was going up for sale because we all knew the guy was going to sell the thing. And somehow, word got to Randy Michaels, and he was like, well, we're looking for somebody to work at this talk station, WOW FM. But it's got to be an afternoon show, and we want it to sound like Gary Burbank. A lot of people in Detroit will remember Gary Burbank from back in the day. And he ended up at WLW in Cincinnati where, you know, they're a talk station until Gary came on. Then they were a laugh-a-minute station.
Right.
Because all he was, it was just comedy for the rest of the afternoon.
Very talented jock.
They brought me in to do afternoons, a shift I still miss. Oh, the fact that you could wake up whenever you wanted to and still go to work. I love that. But that was what they brought me in to do. And they gave it their best run, bled red ink like a stuck pig. And so that ended like 5 months later. We were a little ahead of the curve for talk on FM. I imagine if you'd waited 10 years to do that station, it'd still be on.
Right. Well, I remember there was a lot of the way you guys handled the move to country from talk was very it was very ambiguous, but it was a great you guys did a pretty good campaign of anticipating and creating anticipation. Do you remember that? What do you remember about that time right before you went to country?
What, playing Friends in Low Places, the long version, over and over again for something like 4 days?
Yeah, just to get people to listen, right?
Well, yeah, I got everybody talking. That was the idea. And I did the ins and outs. Of course, we're on a podcast, so I can get away with saying some things, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
I did them as a character. We invented a character called Hugh, first name Hugh, last name Chardon.
Okay, Hugh Chardon. Yes.
You got it now, right?
Yeah.
And so I was Cowboy Hugh, yucking it up like this between the records. And here's another. We would come in and dedicate it to a different person. Usually the person that it got dedicated to, it was almost the same guy every time, was the college roommate of the station owner.
Okay.
So, and it was his idea to do that just to kind of rub it in. So, yeah, we did like, I don't know, 3 or 4 days of that before switching. Now, I will say, that was one of the most terrifying moments in my career. Because I was going in to do my afternoon talk show.
Right.
And the morning guy at the time stopped me, and he goes, no, you're not going on today. And I've got all this prep stuff, and I've got all these guests lined up, and I'm all ready to go and have some fun. He goes, nope, you're not going on. And pretty soon the general manager goes, we need you guys, the whole air staff, just to go in there and sit down.
Wow.
And we sat in one room, and at 3 o'clock they started the Friends in Low Places thing. And one after the next, I watched the people I'd work with go down the hall bawling their eyes out because they'd been fired.
Oh.
They all got their contracts bought out, so there was a little bit of a soft landing there. That was nice. But, yeah, one after the next, until just about the entire news department was gone, along with two or three talk hosts.
So you had to think, I'm next.
I was waiting to get the call to the office. And I didn't have a bulletproof contract, but, you know, I was only 5 months into a 2 years, so I felt pretty good about that. But nothing ever happened. Finally, here comes the morning guy again. He goes, what are you guys still doing in here? We don't know. I think Jill was in there.
Jill Forsyth, right?
Yeah. I can't remember anybody that was in there. Mark Elliott was in there. And in any event, finally, here comes Scott Meyer, the general manager, or not Scott Myers, Betty Tazerman back then. And she was like, what are you guys still doing here? I'm like, well, if you're going to fire us, then fire us and we'll leave. And they go, no, you're staying. We're changing it to a country station. We're going to launch it Monday morning. And JD, who was a morning guy at the time, he's staying. Elliot's staying for middays, and you're staying. I go, I'm staying. I never worked at a country radio station in my life. They go, yeah, but you got the cowboy. I'm from Oklahoma.
Right.
So I got the cowboy boots. I wore a cowboy hat, and I had this awful accent. And an accent that I had to suppress most of the places that
right,
I ever
right.
worked. And they're like, no, you get on the air and sound like Reba McEntire if you want, which I actually start to do after I talk to Reba McEntire. And so that was it. And I had to sit and figure out what the hell to do by Monday and then decide if I was going to stay at it or go someplace else.
Because you were brought in to talk news, to do talk radio, and here you are back as a jock. That had to be quite to come to terms with it for yourself, I'm sure.
Yeah, I will say it was nice in that you had records to go to if you didn't have anything to say at the moment.
Right.
When it was talk radio, you didn't have that luxury.
Right.
So, you know, if the phones weren't ringing, you still had to fill till the next newscast. Nope. I will say one thing. Radio guys always have the same dream about not being able to get to the music.
Yes.
The microphone's open and the songs
Nightmare.
Won't play.
Yes.
That stress dream went away for me after 5 months of doing talk radio. Because once you go without a net, you're no longer afraid of it.
Right on. Well, what I remember about those early 90s, Don, in addition to you and all the great personalities that were there at YCD, was the, you know, if 80s were the decade of the rock radio wars, the early 90s, you guys in W4 went at it. What do you remember about the country war that happened between 106 and 99.5? Because you guys took over the country show that came to Hart Plaza. You guys took over that. Talk about that war. You guys, I think, ended up coming out on top for more than a few years.
Oh, yeah. The war was kind of interesting in that, again, the program director that we had, Al Casey, God rest his soul, Al had a really clever way of attacking competition. And he would do it in a way that wasn't negative. So nobody could say, you're being mean.
Right.
Never got that. We did all kinds of backhanded compliments and things for them, but you know, we want to congratulate W4 on their, you know, decades and decades of being the best old country station in town.
Like a backhanded compliment.
Through that old country thing. You know, their days has come and, well, maybe they're gone. We don't know, but we just want to congratulate them. Great job, you guys.
That's
We're
awesome.
Young country.
That's fantastic.
So, oh, yeah. And they kept trying to fight back and they wouldn't do it the same way we did. We started showing up at their remotes because we didn't have clients yet, so right. We didn't have any remotes to go to. And we would pitch a tent. We'd call up the business across the street and get permission, which turned out to be a free remote for them. Who's going to turn that down?
Right.
So we wound up doing a lot of strip malls and gas stations, but we'd be right across the street from the car lot where they were set up. One of the things that we did was a T-shirt exchange because they were giving away T-shirts.
Right.
And so we're saying, hey, we're in the bullhorn going, if you want one of ours, we'll trade you.
That's awesome.
And so they had a constant stream
of people. The original shirt for shirt.
Yeah, yeah. And because we were doing it on the air, they had a constant stream of people coming over to get their shirts, walking right across the street to get one of ours. And, of course, we were real nice about it. After it's all over with, we took a box of their shirts and gave it back to them.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
So they thought they would get even with us and do the same trick back at us. We were prepared for that. So once we started getting paid remotes and they started showing up across the street, what did we do? Thanked them.
That's awesome.
You know? It was like, that's hey, awesome. W4 is across the street from our little bitty remote.
Right.
My God, it's just us. We're just a little bitty radio station, 18,000 watts and seven listeners, and they're coming across the street. Man, guys, hats off to you.
That's awesome.
Well, it only took about two or three instances before they quit doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet. Well, because they didn't go, quietly. But I want to ask you, talk to me about some of the, because you guys had some big names. We mentioned Jill Forsythe, Eddie Haskell was there. Talk about some of the other great personalities that you rubbed elbows with in those early '90s at YCB. You remember?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we've had. Well, Karen D'Alessandro was over there.
Yes, Karen. Yeah.
And everywhere she goes, she's hugely successful. She wanted to retire to Phoenix, and now she's rocking it in Phoenix.
I went to visit her. She's doing great.
Oh yeah, good. Yeah, I was there for her Hall of Fame induction.
Yes.
Isn't it funny? I always think it's kind of entertaining. Of the people that have been on the air at WYCD, it probably for any one country station anywhere has the most number of country Hall of Fame recipients, and none of us are there now.
Well, yeah. What's interesting, you mentioned this, and I forget, like, because I did country radio morning show in Benton Harbor, and I remember early on, we would hear, you would always be up for the CMA DJ of the year. Do you remember that? How many years didn't you have that? Weren't you nominated or won several years in a row? Talk about that. That had to be gratifying.
I didn't win it at all.
You never won?
Never won.
You're always nominated, though.
Nominated a lot. We didn't do it in the 90s because our program director says, I'm not doing this for awards. I'm doing this for listeners.
Yeah, this happened in the 2000s, right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because in the 90s, he's like, if we start trying to win awards, we're not going to be doing what our listeners expect out of us.
That came later.
And, you know, he's right about that. But, yeah, later on, a lot of nominations, never won the thing, and it was always for the same reason. Chuck and Linda in the afternoons would also be nominated.
Okay,
so
you canceled each other out.
You went to the people who were doing the voting, they're like, well, I can't decide between one or the other, so I'll go vote for this guy over in some other city. And so, you know, we would always both lose until Linda started winning them all when I was in Cincinnati.
That's cool. I do want to say, to me, one of the coolest things is when other broadcasters, you know, kind of sing your praises. And I want to, Jill Forsythe's been on this program before, and I asked her specifically about
Jill.
You. And this is what Jill had to say. Take a listen, Don.
You got to tell me about Dr. Don.
I was so scared to work with Dr. Don. I was so incredibly nervous. I'd been listening to him on WOW, and I could not believe I was going to be coming on after this genius working with Doc. You know, you're just in awe of Doc every single day. He's brilliant. He's funny. He was a bit intimidating, but he's got a huge, big heart, and I learned a lot from Doc.
I mean, Jill Forsythe, another,
Jill,
you know, she's great.
Love her to death. Yeah, she was a lot of fun. I love teasing her because a lot of times I could pull stuff over on her and she'd just be standing there staring at me until she goes, oh, that's a joke. I'm like, yeah.
You know, I remember you mentioned Karen D'Alessandro. I remember Karen and I were talking about, because I was a huge fan of Passion Phone. I thought it was such fascinating radio that she did that
radio.
And she made it of her own. But Karen would be like, they would always listen to Jill and say, how's she going to get out of this? How's she going to get out of this? Because some of these stories would go on forever. But she appeared, or she did. I mean, not just appeared, but she cared about her listeners, and that showed in that Passion Phone. But I think that's what made her special. But could you talk to me about what you thought about working with Jill?
Oh, I love Jilly to death. Again, her Passion Phone, and I think a lot of what she developed with that owes a little bit, owes no thanks to me, but more to the program director we had at the time, because I think he understood nighttime radio better than just about anybody.
Right.
So he would let her run, and you know she would have 7-minute phone call, but you couldn't turn it off.
Right. It was you couldn't stop listening. Yeah.
No. And she always asked exactly the right question. She did it entirely differently than I would have, because I would have been going for a joke or a laugh or trying to trip them up, because that's the way I always work. But yeah, she had that absolute empathy, and it wasn't fake. It came through the radio. She absolutely cared about everybody who was on the call, even the people. And I think she got scammed a time or two.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have phone ops back then. For a while, we had producers that would screen phone calls. But occasionally, you get somebody come through just to try to scam her or spam her or troll or something like that. And, you know, she would deal with them and then just go on about her day like nothing ever happened.
Right.
And then get into the next call. She could shake something off like that and be like, how do you do that, man? I'd be rattled for the entire rest of the night.
In addition to yourself and, of course, Jill, what I remember most about those YCD days was Earl Pitts. What do you remember about Earl Pitts? Talk to me. Can we get some behind the scenes for Earl? Because that was such a great promotion you guys put on.
Earl Pitts was done voiced by Gary Burbank at the WLW in Cincinnati. And Gary and I had known of each other, for quite a while through, I think, some of the same bit-sharing services. So I had the distinct pleasure and honor of writing a few jokes.
That's awesome.
Not full episodes, but a few jokes for Gary. And he would call me up. He'd be like, because, you know, Earl Pitts always says, "You what makes me mad. Yeah. You what makes me mad so yep. bad I want to take a 10-penny nail to my head and hammer it in with a ball pen."
What makes you mad? Right, what makes there. You mad, Earl?
Yeah, what do you, exactly. That little joke that he would do there, he had to come up with a new one every day. And occasionally he'd get to the point that he'd be like, "Okay, I don't have one. I don't have one." And I would write like 4 or 5 of them, and he would 4 or 5 for him. And then he would use 3, and I would hear him the next week on the show. I thought that was great.
Well, what I thought was wonderful. It was just it matched what you got the branding that YCD was going for. It was a Southern redneck, if you will, talking patriotic, and that's what you guys were.
Yeah, and do you know that that we started that over on Wild FM?
Yeah.
You know, it was one of the few bits, because they wanted us all to do our own stuff. They didn't want to do a whole lot of syndicated things. But because Randy Michaels had a hand in this, and because Earl Pitts was big wherever Earl Pitts was,
right?
We wound up with Earl Pitts. And everybody looked forward to it. I mean, it was quality stuff. I don't think he's still doing it. He doesn't really need to. He's got a catalog of about 30 years of Earl Pitts run.
Yeah.
But they were always funny. They were always good. And, you know, it was always cool the time that I spent down there in Cincinnati being in the studio to watch him cut the thing. You know, cut it, stop it, edit it up, and go back, get the voice in again. Yeah, it was just, it was great. It was a work of art. I gotta say that.
Now, you were at YCD, if I'm not mistaken, from 92 to 2015. That is a long time.
The gap for Cincinnati was 2000-2005.
Yeah, so there's a few years you had like a little thing. But before we move on to Cincinnati, talk about, well, let's talk, how did your role change in those two different stints? Or did it? Was it, you
oh,
just,
they want you to, and,
yeah.
Yeah, it really did a little bit because, you know, young country was a different animal. And through different management changes and idea changes, they decided to rebrand it to get away from that young country branding. So that's when they went to 99.5 WYCD and just kept calls kind of the same. And it was a little different radio when I got back and got in there with Rachel and Grunwald. It was a different dynamic, and, you know, a different way they wanted to do radio. It wasn't at all like we had done it, you know, back in the 90s. And I'm not sure a lot of that would have worked.
Right.
Because,
things changed.
You know, we did bits and skits and parody songs. And I sent a guy who's a friend to me even now, Pete Collins. We sent Pete out to do all kinds of fun stunts. And he just didn't really do any of that. That really wasn't where radio was headed anymore. So,
right.
Which is all right. I still go back and tell stories. My favorite Pete story was, and again, we backstopped our bits, so we knew. We sent Pete out to sit in a bank parking lot with a ski mask on before the bank opened just to see what they would do.
Oh, my gosh, that's dangerous.
Yeah, it is, but the cop shop was read in on the bit.
Okay.
They had Pete's license number. They had the make and model of the car. We told them exactly what time we were going to do it and when we were going to pull the plug on the bit and told them, if anything goes sideways, let me know. Here's my own personal phone number. Call me, let me know, and we'll pull the plug on the bit immediately. I don't want anybody to get in trouble. This is just for fun.
Right.
So, and of course, we chose a cop shop that we were pretty good friends with anyway. So if anything went sideways, you know, we'd be all right. So Pete sits in a parking lot, and he keeps reporting back in because they're pulling the blinds back and looking. They're pulling down the slats and looking, see who this guy is. And then finally, the manager comes walking out of the bank, walks up to the car. And Pete's on the radio live with me. He goes, "I cannot believe this. The guy is going to walk up to the car. I got a ski mask on. I'm sitting in the parking lot. And he's going to walk up and knock on the window." I go, "Oh, my God.
Wow.
Hold the mic up." Yeah, wow. Do it. And so, and you hear it. And Pete's roll down window. It's not electric. So you hear Pete crank the window down. He goes, "What?" The guy goes, "Well, you're sitting out here and you got a ski mask on, and you're making us all just a little bit nervous with that ski mask on. Can you explain what you're doing without missing a beat? Pete goes, I just broke up with my girlfriend, and I don't want anybody to see me like this. End of the bit. We're done. You're not going to get any better than that. Time to fold it up and go home.
That is awesome, Don. That's a great story.
So Pete rolled the window back up, started the car, and drove off.
That's
and that
funny.
Was about the time the cop shop called.
It said they're making you making nervous. Yeah.
Yeah. The bank had called 911. It went to the cop shop, and the cop shop put their foot in front of it. But it's like I told them, I said, call us and let us know. And they called us, and I said, he's already out of there. He's already gone and gone. They go, okay, all right, Thank you. Never mind. Talk to you later.
Now, you just mentioned that you did have, you donutted to YCD in Cincinnati at a station called WUBE. Talk about why you left Detroit to go to Cincinnati, and what were you doing in Cincinnati? Some of the same stuff, or what led to that change for you?
Once W4 changed formats in 2000, it was on Memorial Day weekend or just short of Memorial Day. Maybe it was Labor Day weekend. Yeah, I think it was Labor Day weekend. Labor Day weekend, they changed formats.
To what?
And I was on vacation down here. We loved Tampa.
What did they change to?
At the time, I think they went to a kind of a hard rock approach.
Okay, all right.
Eventually changing the call letters. They parked the call letters over in Ann Arbor, as you know,
yeah.
So they could bring them back later, and now they're separately owned, so it's like, well, that'll never change. Anyway, I got the call from Bob Schumann, our news guy. And he was like, hey, great news. W4 flipped. They're no longer country. We got country all to ourselves. And I went, oh, no. He's like, what do you mean? I said, my contract is up at the beginning of next year. And it was always easier to negotiate a contract when you're in a battle like that.
Right.
You know, when they got to have you, when they can't afford to take a hit.
Competition is good for jocks, for sure.
Exactly. So we had new management at the time, and I'm not going to name any names, but I got the smiling face from across the desk. It's like, you know we're not renewing you, right? Yeah.
So you had to go out and find work.
I had to go out and find work. And the funny part is the guy that had been the programming brains behind W4 in its later years was programming in Cincinnati. And so he snatched me up pretty quick. He's like, you're available. Come on down here and let's do it. But Cincinnati was a bit of a different beast, and they had a commercial load and a service load on that morning show that was impossible to fight that.
Okay.
Because you had probably about 26 minutes of every hour was eat up by non-entertainment material. So, and they wanted 10 records an hour. I don't know if I'd be able to do that. So it was a pretty tough thing to do until that contract came up, and that was one of the few times that we both met over the in the office at the same time and almost simultaneously went, yeah, we're done with this.
Yeah, it was a mutual breakup.
That was about the most amicable one I've ever got. I don't want to do this anymore. And they're like, well, we don't want you doing it anymore. And wouldn't you know it, as soon as I leave, they rejigger the format for the morning show, and they're back to only 16 minutes of non-entertainment programming. Well, you gave the next guy 15 more minutes to play than me.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing about Cincinnati is I probably met some of the best lifelong friends I've ever had.
That's fantastic.
Oh, I mean, we're all still in touch. The girl that did traffic for me way back then, she's now married. I married her because I got the little mail-in ordination.
That's cool.
I married her, and that was after I left. Didn't want to do it. And now she and the fam, they come down here just about every 4th of July, make sure to make some time. We go out to dinner and have a good time.
That's my so news cool.
guy.
That's
he
cool.
and I have still been best friends. He wants to start a podcast. I keep telling him can't monetize it. And, I'll just stay friends with everybody.
I think people would like to hear a podcast from Dr. Dunn. I still think you got some stuff to give there. Your creativity juices are still flowing, I can tell.
Thank you.
All right, so it's not often where people get to go back. You mentioned you guys said, okay, we're done. We're with each other. How did you end up back at YCD? They say you can never go home, but you did.
Well, what helped is that the successive morning shows that came after me, and this is a problem when you follow anybody that's been successful. And this was part of my problem in Cincinnati. I always had a saying, never follow the legend, always follow the guy that follows the legend.
Right. Great advice.
And I broke that rule going back to Cincinnati. I mean, you had a guy who was like number one all the way across the board, so I ended up replacing him. Yeah, I wasn't him. So that didn't work. And I think the same thing kind of affected the, where they have three morning shows after I left in 2000. They couldn't claw back to the numbers or the friendliness that I had had. So, you know, they were between shows, and I called up Chip Miller at the time, who was the program director, and pretty much talked him into it. He's like, all right, well, let's bring you back and see what happens. And I think it turned out all right. We had some pretty decent numbers. The thing that always kept us out of the top three was the signal issues that YCD has. I mean, that's 18 kilowatts, and it's got an adjacent right there in Cleveland. And as soon as that lake, the lakes and the weather is just the right way, Cleveland gets into us, we get into them.
Right.
You can't hear us west of 275,
which mess.
Is where a lot of country listeners are. And we didn't have the benefit of streaming back then. I would say if my second trip there had started out with the ability to log on from any device and stream, I think the morning show would have, well, look at it now. It's doing better now.
Yeah.
Of course, DVD flip formats, that always helps a little bit when you're the only ones.
Why do you think you had so much success on the radio here in the Detroit market?
Detroit was a little frightening. I mean, I didn't know what to expect of the people. But I went about it very honestly. I'm not born here. I'm not from here. I'm from Oklahoma, and I want to get to know you people. And for whatever reason, that worked. They bought the authenticity. I say they bought it. I mean, it was authentic. I don't get
sure.
to buy authentic.
Yeah, right.
But it's probably one of the most authentic shows that I've ever done, where I just got to be me. And I got to be me with them. And, you know, I picked up their vibe. They picked up my vibe. I just think we related on a personal level. You know, I've always tried to do the show as if it was, and program directors will tell you this, you do the show as if you're only talking to one person or two or three or something like that. It works even better if you actually go out and make friends with those people.
Right.
And that's there's a lot of things that Al Casey taught us that I have no idea what that was. Oh, am I in battery saver mode?
No, you're good. Over here.
Yeah,
anyway.
not on this end.
Oh, okay.
I have to see what I can plug in where. Hang on just a second.
Okay, no worries.
But I'll keep going if it's all right.
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the things, Al did little things that I think made a big difference in, come on out of there, in relatability, such as you don't wear sunglasses. Wherever you go, you don't wear sunglasses. They got to see your eyes. So no sunglasses. That was one of the rules. The other one is if we're set up at a table, you know, like the booth with the little table and the prizes, he goes, you're in front of the table. You're not behind the table.
Right.
Never have a barrier between you and the listener.
Great advice.
You want to be right there so that, you know, you meet them, you talk to them. You're not going to be on a riser. You're not going to be where they can't get to you. If anything, you're going to ignore that back there until you have to run around and do a quick cut-in or something. We wouldn't even do that. We'd do it from the listener's side so that they were with us as we were doing our job.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Oh, it really was. And I tried to use that and impart that everywhere I went. And it works. You know, it really works.
Well, to that point, I wanted to ask you specifically to get your insight on this, because I was always, when I was on the air, I loved working the phones. And I think any good, and it's different now, you can't do it now. But back when I got into radio, and what I fell in love with radio is when jocks would utilize the phones to get people, the listeners involved. How much did you use the phones, and how did you get so good at it?
I don't think I could do a show without phones. I tracked after I got out of YCD this last time. I did middays in Tulsa from here, and there's no phones. You know, you kind of. And we also did 3 years of a syndicated country show, to where I still had phone recordings from way back in Cincinnati.
Wow.
I still had tapes of phone calls, so I could do a phone topic without actually taking a call,
because
I still had them all sitting there to do. But I guess. I've always enjoyed talking to people on the phone, and if you've got the right topic to get them to call, then it can turn into gold.
Yes.
And at any day, we always found there were a few topics that always worked: kids, food, and pets.
Yeah.
Anytime you needed a phone topic, come up with something that had to do with kids, food, or pets, and you could just run the whole rest of the day.
That's cool. So in 2015, you left YCD. What caused you to leave? When and what? Talk about that move, and where did you go, or were you, was that not voluntary?
Well, it was kind of a budget cut. We all knew it was coming, and Odyssey continues to do so. I mean, Chuck Edwards, you know, also famously got cut, even though he still lives in the area. So, yeah, as everybody says, it was just business. So I get it. I had just signed a new deal, so that was a nice little landing pad. And we already had this place down here. We'd had it for a number of years. So, yeah, we just pretty much decided I'm not doing another winter in Detroit if I can keep from it. Right. And so if somebody wants to get at me or, you know, shop a new gig or something, call me down here. I'll be down here where it's warm and it's toasty.
You just don't do the winters. You do it all year round. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And then when it became pretty obvious nobody was going to pick me up or nobody was interested, probably because I've aged out of the format.
Well, plus the radio changed. I think the product changed, too.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah. And of course, CBS Radio sold, and so that became – Odyssey took that over. So, I mean, the writing was all on the wall back then for all that anyway. So, yeah, so I came down here. There was nothing going on up there. So we found a nice Spanish couple to live in the house and moved everything down here, which is a problem because this place was already furnished, and it's not very big. So when you take the house that we have there, which was quite a bit bigger – I mean, it wasn't huge. I mean, it didn't have an indoor swimming pool or anything like that. Yeah, there's I would hold this up so you can see around, but it's plenty cluttered. This is my office. There's my recording studio.
Nice.
Just a little soundproof booth where the microphone sits in there most of the time to cut the room ring. But as you can tell, the birds, their nighttime cages are up here. There's a toy that they play on all day.
Wow.
And it's not a very big room.
That's what you use. That's what you use. Now, in my career, I got to interview some cool celebrities and country artists. You've interviewed the big ones. You've interviewed big-name country artists, celebrities, and spent time with some of these folks. Can you talk about maybe a couple of your favorites over the years, country or no?
Gosh, there's so many that are just plain favorites, and for different reasons. I always had a blast when the band Lone Star would come around because we played the little games and stuff with them, and they wanted to play the games. They didn't care about the interview so much. They're like, hey, let's have some fun. Let's play In Your Pants. You remember that game?
Yes, I do. Yes,
okay, remember that very well. And the ones that I still hear from will have, hey, Doc, I just wanted to call you up. I just heard a really cool title. It works really good with In Your Pants. I'm like, okay. At least you remember the bits. Man, there's so many of them. That
you mentioned
favorites.
Reba earlier. She was a big one, I'm sure.
Yeah. Reba was probably about the smartest person in country radio that I knew. Reba could sit there and sign autographs. We had little postcards that people would give us, self-stamped, self-addressed, and then we would have the artist sign it and mail it back. That way they get an easy autograph. Reba would sit there and do like 50 of those things, and without missing a beat, answer all the questions
she was
that we were talking about. And you got to realize when you were sitting there talking to her, this woman can sing, but got some brains back there, some major, major brains.
I have to tell you this quick little story. I've not as many as you. I mean, your career was much longer than mine, but I got to meet and hang with some cool celebrities. And there's only and I was big on adamant, just look them in the eye, treat them like they're everyday people. But there was two people that I could not because I was so like in awe. And one was Muhammad Ali, and the other was Reba McEntire. I couldn't look at them because they were just so famous. I couldn't even my head couldn't handle it. But Reba, which is funny about Reba because, you know, she's so down to earth. She is Reba, the television show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, there's not a lot of difference there at all. Love her to death. The only one that ever would trip me up, and it's just the way there are people that can look through you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They look you in the eye, and you're just like, okay, I don't know what to do now.
Colin Ray was like that for me. Colin Ray looked right through me. He freaked me out because he was a nice guy, but he looked through me. I know what you mean.
Patty Loveless was the one that always got me tongue-tied.
Okay,
I sat down with her, and everybody got a big kick out of it. And the thing that we had in common, and usually if you have something in common like that, you can break through walls with some of those people. And she's a ham radio operator.
Oh, okay.
I'm a ham radio operator. So, you know, we were able to sit and talk ham radio and little geeky things before we even started the tape recording going for the actual interview. So... once we did that, then it kind of made a friendly sort of thing. We just kept going. Toby Keith, God rest his soul,
great
was
one.
Another yeah. fun. You know, Toby, we had a greeting we always did since we were both from Oklahoma, and we both worked in the oil fields. So wow. that was something that got behind Toby. You know, when he's first doing his interviews and he's all really kind of nervous like this, trying to get used to people, I'd be like, hey, did you ever go up and work the Black Hills? He goes, wait, you worked in the oil fields? I go, yeah, and we talked about rigs. So, boom, he's cool. He's at ease now with me for anything else and stayed that way. So our greeting was always, hey, Oak. I'd be like, hey, Oak.
That's cool.
And it just went from there. And his wife was a great interview, too. I did this to him and I did it to Charlie Daniels. I had an interview scheduled, and we went through the usual, yeah, new record's coming out, really sounds pretty good. Hey, is your wife with you? I'd be like, well, yeah. I go, put her on. And I would eat up the entire five-minute interview
That's
talking
awesome.
To her.
That's awesome.
And I did that with Helen, Charlie Daniels' wife. Just sit there and talk. Pretty soon I got the phone back to Toby, and Toby's like, well, I guess you don't want to talk to me because time's up. You know, I guess we'll talk to you later. No, my wife will talk to you later.
That's funny. Okay, those are celebrities, but can you share with me one or two of your proudest moments in radio broadcasting in general, things that you're proud of from your career?
The Country Radio Hall of Fame, that getting that award, the notification, I didn't think I had a dog's chance in hell of getting it, you know? And first ballot especially, I've got friends who took 3 and 4 and 5 years of being on the ballot for that before they got in. And it was my first year, so I didn't really think anything of it. Put together everything, sent it off. Now I'm on my way home, and the guy who had done mornings for years in Columbus, a guy by the name of Skip Mahaffey, does religious radio now. We had made good friends because we crossed paths all the time doing the interviews down there in Nashville before CMAs and some of those other things. Skip Mahaffey calls me up. I can't really repeat what he says, but it was like, you! I'm like, wait, what? What are you going to do? He goes, damn you! Like what? He goes, you're in the hall.
That's awesome. Oh, that's cool.
I like driving down the street. I had to pull over into a parking lot. I just could not believe it. It was really probably the only real award I kind of wanted in the business. Right. The ACMs, the CMAs, they're all nice, but you know, I wanted that one.
This
wanted
is
one
forever.
That was going to hang
forever.
On the wall forever.
Yeah.
Although you got to go find it. I think now they've moved the Hall of Fame. I think it's now in the men's room of the Civic Assembly Center. In Jackson, Tennessee. I have no idea where it
that's,
is.
That's too funny. How do you hope to be remembered as a radio broadcaster, Don? Have you given that any thought? How do you hope to be remembered as a radio broadcaster?
Well, probably somebody who just did it differently. You know, unique, fun. Most of the guys in the business remember me from writing the prep sheet because in addition to doing the show for 25 years, I wrote jokes for all these other radio stations.
Yeah.
So a lot of guys remember it from that, but you know, just from kind of being on the cutting edge of things, because, I mean, we've had a couple places, the Power Pig down here and Young Country up there, where it was totally something hadn't been done before.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be at the cutting edge of that, to shape it and make it work, that's all I want.
Well, I think for me, you know, what I could say about you is as strong as Detroit is in radio personalities, when you talk about JP, Ken Calvert, you know, JJ in the Morning Crew, Drew and Mike, you always had a seat at the table of all these great people, in my opinion, I think.
I appreciate that. I always said, as far as listeners go, if they remember me as taking their mind off of whatever was bothering them for 1 minute, that's all I want.
What, in your opinion, as we wrap up, in your opinion, what is the state of radio today? I mean, it's not, obviously, it's still flourishing, but it's not what it was. What's your thought?
No, it isn't, and I think a lot of that has to do with the economics of it to begin with. You had mass station owners that drove down spot prices in all these markets. Because, I mean, even if you had the numbers, if you go into McDonald's, for say, because that's right. One of the sponsors we never got on the show. If you can believe that, McDonald's, Budweiser, Coca-Cola.
Interesting.
And it wasn't anything about us. It was a spot rate. Because Clear Channel at the time, iHeart now, they could offer you 7 radio stations for $10 a spot.
Right.
If you bought a big... There's no way we could do that. Because our stations were all very much individual, and we had a lot of talent on there. Had a lot of those checks to have to cut. So now, you know, people getting into radio are finding that it doesn't pay what it did. The job offers that I've had since being out, the salary was equivalent to what I made in Springfield, Missouri, in the mid-80s, not adjusted for inflation.
That's too funny.
If that gives you some kind of idea of...
not funny, that's why sad.
Sure, and it's like, I'll take that pay, but I'm going to do the show from here.
Right.
I'm not moving up to Kansas City to do afternoons, and you make me sign a contract that has a 90-day termination clause in it. No, I've watched too many people get burned over that. So it's like my agent said, he said, you picked the best time in the world to get out.
Yes.
So if that's if that tells you anything about the state of radio, I mean, good for Tim Roberts. He's managed to keep pretty much a live staff on the air at YCD, and nobody else is able to do that. They're all tracked. They're all imported, or in the case, we have a station down here that only has a morning show, a couple people doing the morning show. There isn't even tracking the rest of the day. They're number one.
Wow.
They're the top radio station, and all they have is, you know, they got the lighter guy that comes on once an hour, and then they do traffic a couple times an hour, and that's live. But there's no jocks. That's thing just crazy. Runs tunes all day long. And the lone morning show, if there's a remote, they're the ones always doing it. Every Saturday, they're somewhere.
That's crazy. What's next for Don Carpenter?
Working on a book.
Oh, cool.
I actually started this some years ago, and then got sidetracked when a station, it was actually my old general manager from back in the Young Country days. He tapped me to start a syndicated weekend country show. And we got up to about 30 or 40 stations with it and ran 3 years of it. Then COVID hit, and that kind of blew the whole thing up. So everybody that was paying to get on it, they just couldn't afford it anymore. That COVID wrecked a lot of stuff like that. So I'm like, well, you know what? I'll just sit back down, pick up the novel where I left off, and keep going with it. It's a murder mystery, and the lead character is a former Detroit detective.
Ooh, I like that. I like that.
Yeah, I like it. And she's been suspended. The reason why is part of the book.
Well, I can't wait to read it. You got to let me know. Keep me posted on that. I'll definitely promote it. Don, I want to thank you for sharing your broadcast story. Thanks for coming on, boss.
All right. Much appreciated. Thanks for putting up with the loudmouth, which now he's not talking so much, and she's taking a nap. She's on top of my other computer monitor right over there, and she's taking a nap. I don't know if I can get her to wave bye-bye.
There you go. Yeah. Say goodbye.
Wait, bye-bye.
Oh, that's so cool.
Say bye-bye. Say bye-bye. There you go.
Hang with me 1 second, Don. Thanks again to Don Carpenter, Dr. Don, and thank you for checking out Radio Days, the podcast. Of course, today's podcast is sponsored by Radio Days, 101 Years of Radio, a new docuseries about the history of terrestrial radio. Hear the story from those who lived it. You can watch it on Reveal, the free streaming service, or on demand at Vimeo. You can find that link at ronrobinsonstudios.com. You can also hear previous episodes of this streamcast there as well. And if you'd like to learn more about the upcoming documentary I've been talking about, the history of radio, Radio Days, 101 Years of Radio, that's the title. Click on the Radio Days, the movie tab under the documentaries tab at, you guessed it, ronrobinsonstudios.com. Thanks for checking out the show. Hope you enjoyed it. Until next time.
You can't go. All the plants are going to die.